All right. I guess good morning, everybody. My name is Paul Long, and like Daryl mentioned, I'll be talking about Network Monitor. Maybe you guys have seen the presentation before. Hopefully, it'll change a little bit. I've changed the slides, if nothing else, to confuse you, to keep you attentive during this presentation. How many people have used a protocol analyzer before? Let me just kind of, most everyone? All right. So who am I? As I like said, Paul Long. I'm a technical evangelist. I have a blog that we write every once in a while on Network Monitor and troubleshooting in general. We also have our Connect site where we run our betas. And previously, before this job, I used to work in a group called CPR. We used to do critical problem resolution. And I was on the networking team, so I used protocol analyzers all the time. It was part of my job, so I'm very familiar with troubleshooting, and that's where my background came from and why this product is so interesting to me. The other thing that's sort of interesting note, a personal note, is I built a recording studio in my garage. I'm really into recording and playing instruments and using a lot of recording equipment, so it's kind of fun. And there's some analogies there, interestingly enough. So the key takeaways, if nothing else, if you don't do anything else, these are the kind of the main things I want you to get across, the main points here. Just understand how to capture, filter, find packets with Network Monitor. Very important thing with any protocol analyzer, and I want to tell you show you some tricks, some key things for doing that. Also, how to locate protocol information based on the protocol you're looking at. So if you're in Network Monitor and you see a protocol and you say, I need to get more information about that, how do I do that? Where do I find the reference documentation about that? And then finally, how to document issues and annotate captures. This is some new features we've added in the 3.3 version that allow you to, well, the annotation part, allow you to take captures and actually annotate them. And I'll actually show you some that we've done ourselves on the CodePlex site that we've uploaded recently. And then also as far as documenting issues, there's ways of taking information out of NetMon and like pasting them into just text files or in email or on the forums if you have questions. So I'll show you how to do that too. So here's some background, just some history about Network Monitor. It actually developed, the original version, the 1.0 and the 2.0 versions, were developed back in the 90s. And this is the Windows 4 group time. So we had our first networking product. We kind of wanted to get into that game at that point, and we needed some way to analyze the information that we're doing over the network. So Network Monitor was built at that time. But then development stopped, probably about 10 years. Nothing was done. And what happened is the parsers kind of got stale. Things didn't get updated. And so we decided to sort of revive this product, and we created a completely new version that was released in 2006. And every 9 months or so, we release a new version. So we're kind of built on this, we call it a Scrum model, but we kind of build iteratively and try to put out many different versions over a short period of time so you guys can see new features and realize and use the new features, and as well as we kind of keep a stable version going during that time period. And the most recent version is the 3.3 version, which I'll focus on. So we had a new vision, new team, new design. We basically wrote it from the ground up. And we had some goals. Probably the main things I want to point out on here is the accurate parsers is probably one of the more important things, where we wanted to keep them fresh, because what happens is they're written by our development group, they're written in some, you know, C code somewhere, and then they don't get updated because people don't understand the original code. So we wanted to integrate the parser development into the product itself. We also wanted to do a little bit better with the easy use, make the interface easier to use, and make filter building, which is one of the more things you do most often, make that easier. Okay, so let's go back. We'll start talking about using Network Monitor. I call this a Red Bus Tour. I've been to London, well, it was probably 2 or 3 years now. But you get on this bus, right, and you roam around. The guy in the front talks about different things, and then you can get off the bus to go do different stuff. So we'll get off the bus to do some demos during this, but for a lot of this, I'll just discuss, you know, the simple stuff on the slides themselves. And this is basically a key of what we're going to go over. I won't read this off. You can read it real quick. But basically, these are the different areas we'll explore in the remaining part of this talk. So here's the start page. If you start Network Monitor by using the UI rather than opening up Capture, this is the one that will pop up. And it has some information on the right, on the left side there that, well, I guess the right side if you're facing it, that describes our features, some links to our blog, various stuff like that. And then you also have the recent captures on the start page, which is useful if you're opening up some captures or you just save something. Makes it really easy to go back and open a recently used capture. And then finally, we have our select network, where you can select which NICs you're going to capture on. And one of the interesting things with Network Monitor that Wireshark does not do is you can capture on multiple NICs all at the same time. So if you have a multi-home NIC, it makes it very easy to capture all that traffic in one capture. So this is how you do a capture, and I'm not going to demo this. This is fairly straightforward. This is one of the things we made very easy in Network Monitor. You basically go, you select your networks, and you hit play, and it starts recording. So that's hopefully a fairly simple scenario. If you get stuck with that, let me know. But I'm hoping that that we designed the product well enough that part is really easy to do. So here's the capture tab, just a general overview of each section that comes up by default. You can rearrange these windows, actually, if you need to, but this is the default. So we have at the top the display filter. You can also do your capture filters there if this is a live capture. Then on the left side here, we have what we call our conversation tree, and I'll discuss that a little bit later, but it allows you to basically to narrow down and focus in on traffic by just clicking a node in the tree. Then we have our frame summary, and if you use Wireshark, it's basically the same thing, a summarization of each frame. When you click on a frame, the frame details for that selected frame come up, and it's a tree format. And then when you click on a field in the tree, the hex data also highlights the area for that frame. So here's some general notes about capturing network traffic. So when you're getting a trace of something, there's some things to be aware of because there are pitfalls that people get into when they're taking a capture. So the first one I like to talk about is promiscuous mode. If you've got a capture and you're trying to see traffic from other machines, that's not always as easy as you think, especially with switches today that tend to block traffic. It makes it more difficult. So the first thing is that Network Monitor does not capture in promiscuous mode by default. So that means it's only going to see the traffic that's destined to your machine or leaving your machine. So you have to put it in promiscuous mode if you want to see other traffic. Now, that does not solve the problem where you have a switch that's blocking traffic. Then in those cases, you might have to actually configure the switch to work properly, which is a step you'll have to figure out how to do on your own. But if you take a trace and you're not seeing all the traffic you think you should see, then it could be that you're not in promiscuous mode or that your switch is somehow blocking that traffic. As I mentioned, we have multi-home traffic, so you can capture on two NICs at the same time. You can select which ones you want to capture. We also have a new feature called auto-scroll. So we have live capturing, actually, in Network Monitor. You hit play, and you start seeing the frames scroll by. You can hit the auto-scroll button, and you'll see them basically update. It'll show you the last one rather than just kind of buffering off into the, into the future. So with the auto-scroll button, you'll see the latest traffic first or last, and it'll allow you to, for instance, you could run some command and see exactly what happens at that time. And as long as you're narrowed in and you don't have a lot of extraneous traffic, you can kind of put the two together as they happen. It's kind of a nice feedback. And in the 3.3, we also added some WAN and tunnel adapters. So there's more choices when capturing in Network Monitor 3.3 that allow you to see this tunnel traffic, especially like on Windows 7 machines and et cetera. Now, the UI is one way to capture traffic, but NMCAP is another tool we have. It's basically a command line tool that allows you to script. It's flexible, and it has more choices for saving capture files. So one of the limitations of the UI is that you can't save a circular capture or a chain capture for instance, if you need to save a lot of data and you don't want to save it in one big file, you want to save it in multiple chain captures. That's what we call a chain capture. But NMCAP has these different features for capturing, such as circular and chain capture. It's also the tool of choice if you want to run for a long period of time. The UI will just capture forever. It'll just say, all right, I'll, basically 100 gigs, I don't care. But it'll run out of memory sooner or later. Your UI will run out of memory. And you can get in this funky state where you've got a lot of traces, but you can't save them because the UI just ran out of UI resources to even do the save. So NMCAP is the better tool. It's also faster, higher performance. So for 1 gig networks or whatever, you probably want to use NMCAP. And it's also automatable. You can put it in a batch file. You can make it stop and start in certain situations. So NMCAP is probably a better tool if you're doing some either really long or trying to automate capturing within a batch file or something. Now, some things that UI can do that NCAP can't do is we have something called application tracking. And you can see there's a little example here. In our conversation tree, we actually sort out the traffic by applications. So now you can click on Outlook and see all the Outlook traffic real simply by using the conversation tree. And we also support wireless traffic on supported hardware. So what this means is you can put a wireless card in something called scanning mode and scan the channels from within the UI.
So how do you scan the application?
So what we actually, you mean how we do it? There's actually an API call that allows you to get all the ports, the TCP and UDP ports, and assign processes or get the associated process. So that's what we do. And we actually, so it's not perfect 100% because what will happen is a process will come up and go away real quick, and we kind of poll the table. So we pull the table. So there might be a situation where if it goes away real quick, we won't capture that data. But for the most part, it works pretty well, especially for long-running applications. Explicitly the program name that opened the port. So Alloc opens whatever port, you know, and if you do a, can't remember the name, the port list, to generate the port list, it uses the same API calls. And then finally, we have something called truncation support, and this is both in NMCAP and UI. If you want to just get the first 68 characters of a frame because you know you have a lot of traffic, we have that option as well. So like I talked about before, traffic has to arrive at the machine. That's fairly important. Make sure that you take that into account when you're doing a capture. The second thing is that sometimes if you try, you can filter while you capture or after you capture. If you filter while you capture, you run the risk of losing data, important data that's necessary for parsing and understanding the traffic. So, for instance, you could do a capture filter on LDAP. You could type in LDAP and do a capture filter. The problem is that not all the traffic is LDAP up front. Some of it's continuation data inside TCP. So if you do that, you're not going to get everything you need. So it's fairly safe to filter on TCP traffic, for instance, TCP port number. But in that case, you might miss broadcasts or ARPs that are important for at least troubleshooting low-level problems. So I usually recommend, if you can, filter after the fact. Another thing we've added in 3.3 is drop frames. And these last three bullets kind of all rotate around the same subject. But basically, we buffer frames now in 3.3. So this means that when you're doing a capture, we have to parse that data. We actually buffer that data behind the scenes and then parse it as we can. So if you have a capture filter, that capture filter happens after the buffering. So if you had like a 1 gig network and you know just streams of information's coming in, your buffer in the background can get filled up before it even gets to the parsing. If you have a really slow CPU or a really fast network, the data gets buffered in a file behind the scenes. So this kind of means two things. One, that there's an indicator in the UI that says pending frames, and this is the pending frame count, which says, you know, there's a bunch of frames I haven't gotten to yet, I haven't parsed yet, and if, you know, as you stop, it's going to have to catch up over time. That pending frame count continues to grow, and this is true in NCAP and the UI, then that means you might not be able to keep up with the traffic long term. So if you start a trace, you see the pending frame go up, up, and up, your CPU's too slow, your network traffic's too fast, something has got to give there, and you might lose frames. And after a while, after the buffer gets filled up, you'll drop frames. And we have a drop frame count to tell you when that happens. But after a while, the buffer's full, we can't parse, we're just going to drop them. This is going to happen on a really fast network. It's true of any network analyzer. So as I talked about, I already talked about this, but for the most part, NMCAP is the best tool when you want to script something or you want to run it for a really long time. And it has cool features, like you can start on a frame, you know, on a pattern, network pattern, stop on a network pattern, stop in a certain amount of time. It's also automatically in the path, so if you just, you know, run CMD, you can, you know, start a capture real quick with NMCAP. So let me see if I can demo this.
So like NMCAP and
T-Shark, whatever the command line tool is for Wireshark. So probably the easiest thing to do in nmcap is slash examples, shows you a bunch of examples, because as we probably all know, command line tools are very crazy to use. So this is probably the easiest way to learn how to use nmcap. There's a slash help, which goes through, you know, 50 or so options. But for instance, this is a very simple command line to do a capture at nmcap. So we say all networks slash capture. We want to capture TCP traffic, save it in a file, tcp.cap. But if you're going to learn it, I do slash examples. Look at some of the examples, and you'll probably find one that works for you. All right, diving deep. Next part is about getting into a frame. How do you find your data? Where do you go, or what tools do you have available to you to locate information in a trace? So conversation tree is one of the tools, something unique to Network Monitor, that makes it really easy to locate traffic and explore the traffic without having to understand how to type filters, understanding a protocol. It adds a level of, it basically sorts the data for you, collates it like, you know, a copying machine. Filtering is obviously probably the general tool most people are familiar with when doing looking for data in a trace. And we have some tools to help you with that. We have something called aliasing, which allows you to give friendly names to IP addresses and MAC addresses. So if you want to say, hey, this server IP address, I'll call it server, and then it shows up as server in the frame summary, so you have an easier way to reference that rather than memorizing IP addresses or whatever. There's an alias file that you can save and reload. You also have a default alias file that you can load all the time. So if you have like a system, a bunch of machines set up you use all the time, you can have a default one that loads up. Digging in the frame details, we're going to talk about how to kind of get into the frame details, how to figure out how to do a filter based on the frame details. We're going to talk about reassembly, which is something a little bit different for Network Monitor than Wireshark. Wireshark does it automatically and load the trace. In Network Monitor, you actually have to hit a button to reassemble the data, and there's some tricks there I'll show you. Then I talked about annotating the captures, something we'll go over. And then finally, finding protocol document references based on whatever protocol you're looking at. Any other questions before we kind of dive into this part? Okay. So rather than talk about this, let's demo this. I picked the wrong one. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and open up a trace, and I'll use my recently used captures. And so we talked about the layout of the windows. We have the conversation tree over here. But simply enough, if I click on a frame here, it shows the frame details. If you click on, and I'll here we have two things, frame comments and hex details. So I'm going to highlight the frame details. You click on the frame details, you see that it highlights over in the hex details the associated data. So if you need to figure out something's going on correctly, it's an easy way to get that associated. Now one trick here is, and we get this question all the time, is that the highlight color by default in Windows and Vista is very light and very difficult to see. In fact, you notice this in Outlook too. It's not specific to Netmon, but it's the operating system. The non-focused color is very dark. So I made mine darker. I went into control panel and changed the button color a little bit darker to make it more obvious. But if you can't see it, just squint your eyes or whatever. It is there. It's just very difficult to see. Another cool thing is that in the hex details, you can double click in the hex details and find the associated information backwards. So if you see something in the hex details, like a name or something, and you want to see where it's associated in the frame details, you can double click there. So that's very useful. One of the problems with doing this is I can't. Oh, yeah. So let's show you just two more things here. So the other thing you can do is you can highlight information in the hex details, and you do decode as. So if something didn't parse properly, if something doesn't look right, you can actually force it to parse as something else. There are some limitations. There are some state information, like you were talking about before, that if you don't have that state information and you try to decode as, it won't decode properly. So, but it does work for, you know, TCP. Anything that's not really state, too state-driven, you can decode that information. And then, as far as one of the things to help you document, and this is document email, document case, say you have a problem you want to send to Microsoft or on our forums, and you say, hey, I've got this issue. A lot of people take pictures, they'll take bitmaps of the screens, and some of that's not very helpful because bitmaps will, like for instance, cut off the description. So one of the cool things in network monitoring is you can copy this data to the clipboard. So I'll do copy. And then it copies it in the clipboard with tabs separated. So if I just paste it into Excel, do this again. It'll actually automatically line up the cells for you because it's tab separated. So you can do the same thing in a piece of email. If you format something as a table, that table will automatically be formatted for you. And then you'll have all the information. It doesn't cut off anything. If I'm reading the email, I can go back and see the whole thing. In fact, so another thing I'll do is I'll grab this one column out of Excel. Paste it in the notepad. And then there are all the summary frames. So it's an easy way to kind of send this information back and forth rather than doing bitmaps. The same thing holds true in the frame details. I can copy that data. It'll actually remember what I have open, the tree. So if I wanted to show somebody something with the flags, I can copy the tree and paste that information. So this makes it very simple to kind of pass this data back and forth without having to do screenshots or save file as text. Some people do that in Wireshark and then grep through the file and pull out the various pieces of information. The other thing I put here again is I talk about reassembly, and we'll go into that detail a little bit later. So what exactly are conversations? They're basically a logical grouping of frames. So you've probably seen this option if you use Wireshark where you say follow the stream, I think it is, and it'll show you the TCP stream. Well, what we've done is kind of the same thing, but for all protocols or any protocol that wants to enable it. So you can see here up in our conversation tree, we have at the very top, it's the process. Then we have IPv4. So we group all the frames going to the same IPv4 pair in a conversation. And we do this in our parsers. It's defined in the parsers. Any protocol can choose to do it the way they want to. And then further down, you can see that TCP and then SSL and E, so it's hierarchical. It's a visual way to filter, zero in on the frame. So you click in the conversation tree, I click on a TCP port combination, and it filters on those ports for you. So by clicking the conversation tree, you filter what you see in the frame summary. It's not limited to connection-oriented protocols. You can make a conversation based on any key that you find. It, you know, it could be UDP, and you have some key, and you associate all the frames with that same key together. So they have to be connection-oriented at all in that case. Includes the process tracking. Maintains the state for parsers, so that kind of goes back to your question, where if we have state information, for instance, the TCP ACKs and sequence numbers for keeping track of retransmits and duplicate ACKs and fast ACKs, we keep all that information as state in the TCP parser, which tends to also eat up some memory there. So some people say, well, I don't need any of that information. I'll turn off conversations and I'll save some memory. I'll be able to load a greater, bigger trace. That is true, except that state information is necessary to parse, especially for upper protocols. So SMB, for instance, some things won't parse properly without conversations enabled. In SMB specifically, there's a case where we send a command, and the response does not have the command. You have to know, you have to have the send in order to parse the second packet, because you won't know what it is.
If you're running NMCAP, it doesn't do all this parsing, it just captures it, then you can parse it.
Yes, exactly. So the actual conversation building is done afterwards, post-processing. So if you get a trace with Wireshark, load up Netmon, you still get all the conversation. You don't get the process information because that's something we do special. And I don't know if I pointed out, but MCAP doesn't capture process information right now, which is one of the limitations. And in fact, we're fixing that for the next version, but that is one of the limitations right now. So you can take any trace and open it up, and it'll still build the conversation tree. It builds that on the fly as it's loading the parsers. And so it's defined by the parser. So for IP, we say, hey, everything that has a source and destination IP address the same, put that all in one conversation. And then we do for the same thing for TCP, except that it's hierarchical. So we actually have something that says build conversation with parent, meaning build TCP with the source and destination ports, and then also with the upper level protocol, whatever it got defined above me, base it, you know, in the tree, make it hierarchical so that all the TCP port combinations fall under that IPv4 combination. Any questions on conversations? We'll do a little demo on how to use this stuff. So here are my tricks. Selecting conversation node filters on that conversation. So you select in the tree, filters in the frame summary window. You can also right click any frame and find conversation, very similar to the Wireshark follow the stream, except that you can do it on TCP, you can do it on IPv4, on SSL, HTTP, anything that we define a conversation for. So it's not specific to just TCP streams. Also, once you get to a point in the tree, and I'll show you this in a second, it's very easy to kind of scan what's going on in a conversation by looking at the conversation tree rather than kind of going through the trace file, and I'll show you that in a second. Display filters are combined with selected conversations, so the two are sort of anded together, which sometimes gets confusing because you'll have a conversation or you have a display filter applied. Then you go click somewhere else in the conversation tree, and there won't be any frames in common because you'll forget you had the display filter. So just keep that in mind when you're using the two together. You can right-click copy the filter for a conversation into the buffer. So if you want to do multiple nodes in the tree, you can create a display filter. You can't multiple select in the tree, but you can do this by creating a filter. And then I'd say virtual filter. You can't filter on the conversation tree, which would actually be kind of useful if you wanted to say, okay, only show me IP traffic or HTTP traffic in the tree. You can't do that. But you can sort of virtually do this by creating a display filter, saving it, and then reopening the file again. So it's kind of a workaround for filtering in the conversation tree. Any questions? So let's kind of just do a whirlwind tour here. So like I said, if you have a large list of frames and you say, okay, I want to find out where this conversation is, you can right mouse click, find conversation, and it shows you the list of available conversations for that frame. So if you wanted to be Wireshark-esque, you could click TCP and show the TCP conversation. And when I select that, it selects the node in the tree. And by selecting that node, it also filters on those frames. So I'm going to open up another trace to kind of show you this idea of using the conversation to scan your data. So let's say that I want to find this conversation here. I can now quickly scan each of these TCP conversations by just down arrowing. In fact, I can, if I know what's going on, I can say, okay, Kerberos request, another Kerberos request, some sort of LPT. I can fairly quickly kind of go through these by down arrowing in the conversation tree to figure out what's going at a higher level. So that's kind of a neat thing you can do with conversation. Like I also mentioned, you know, they get combined. So if I do a display filter in the conversation tree, and I'm sure there's no frames that intersect here, it becomes blank because it's combining the two together. So sometimes you get into this weird state where you've clicked here, you know you have traffic that the display filter, so you have to remember to click the top of the tree. I don't think I have any port 80 traffic, but basically the two are combined. The conversation and the display filter are combined together. What was that?
I think there's a lot of
SMB. Yeah, I think, I'm not even sure. This looks like LDAP traffic, basically. Okay, and the last thing I was going to show is, say you wanted to filter on two parts. You wanted to say, these first two, I want to see the traffic for both of these. Well, you can right-click and say, copy the conversation to the clipboard and then paste it in. So this is the actual, at least one way to represent the conversation. So the question before, I guess it wasn't really a question, it was more a comment about the type of traffic that was in this race. He was putting a sign up telling me to repeat the questions. So by right-clicking and copying to the clipboard, that is one way to represent the conversation. And interesting enough, we have these things called conversation IDs, and those are the IDs that we stamp for all these various conversations. So they're just a number that, you know, basically grows over time as we increment for each conversation. So if I wanted to combine two of these, I could say this or, and I could just, you know, basically put two of these together. And so now I have, and of course I'm clicked on this node here, so I have to click off of it. And now I have those two conversations together. So just some little tricks to use in the conversation tree. All right, so we're going to switch gears a little bit and just go to filtering. This is probably something you're more familiar with if you've used Wireshark before. So the first thing about filtering in Network Monitor, all the filtering is the same. Color filter, NMCAT, display capture, they're all the same. You don't have to learn different languages to do capture filter or a color filter. It's all the same for Network Monitor. We also have standard filters built in, which is just a bunch of filters that have cover some common scenarios. IntelliSense, so when you build a filter, there's IntelliSense, and I'll show you that in a second as well, but it helps you build a filter by, I don't know if you use IntelliSense in our other products, but basically if you type dot, you see all the top level items. And I guess, I don't have an example here, but I'll show you what that is. And also in our help file, we have a lot of information on building filters, some examples, and to help you get started. So clever tricks for filters, dot starts IntelliSense. And here's the example that I'll even show you this. But basically if you hit a dot, you see all the upper levels, so you can type protocol, dot, and you'll see like TCP, all your protocols. So that's a very simple way to start building a filter. We have color filters. You can create color filters to identify frames with certain colors using the same filter. So if you wanted all TCP port 80 traffic to be blue, you could do that. You can right-click add to a filter. So this is a very simple way to get started. If you have a frame that you're looking at and you want to create a filter, you can right-click on an element in the frame details, add it as a filter, and it'll build the filter for you. So this kind of helps you get situated if you don't even know where to start. You just want to find all frames like this one. This is one simple way to do this. We also have Control-F, you know, find the next frame. So if you really just wanted to jump to the next frame that matched rather than filtering on it, Control-F is, you know, find like in all our other products. So here are some examples. You can just type in the protocol name to find all those frames that match the protocol, so MSRPC or LDAP to find all that traffic. TCP port 80, find all port 80 traffic. You can filter on the process name that we've captured, so you want to find all Internet Explorer traffic, you can do it that way. Properties are these pieces of information we keep, and one of the properties is the protocol name, so you could use the string if you wanted to use that instead of the name. Color filters, like I mentioned, you can do color filters the same way you can, the same type of filtering language. I'll show you those. These last two are kind of special case or special helpers when creating filters. Contains allows you to search for a string anywhere in a string value. Now, there is a caveat here that the string itself that you're searching has to be, it can't be binary data. It has to be all string or all Unicode data. If you want to search in a binary chunk of data, you can use something called contains bin, which is contains binary. It's basically a binary searching tool.
Does that include strings?
Does that include strings? Yes. So if you have, what it's really built for is searching the entire frame. So this example, if you don't know where you're looking at all, you can search an entire frame for a string, ASCII string, a Unicode string, or just hex data, if you just know, you know, 0x1, 0x2, 0x3, you can actually put a string that represents that hex data. So this is really useful for searching the whole frame, basically anywhere in the frame. You can narrow it down to a field sometimes. there's these funny rules when we were building this that we found out. So we tell people that to start with the frame, this is the best way to do. You can try to use it for other blobs. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. It's best just to search the whole frame. Yes? So the question is, that's okay, but let me call that out. So the question is, does contains work with ASCII Unicode? So there is a difference between, another difference between contains and contains bin. Contains automatically searches ASCII Unicode, all versions for you. Contains bin, you have to specify what you're looking for. So you have to tell it you're looking for ASCII. You tell it you're looking for Unicode. It won't search one or the other. Contains is a little bit more flexible in that manner. So if you're looking at a string, contains is a lot easier to use. Because if you might not know it's Unicode or ASCII. So let's show this. A couple of these things. So the first thing I wanted to show you was the when I right-click. So let's say that I'm on the source port. I want to find all of the traffic that matches this particular frame based on the port. So I can add selected filter, and you see that it creates a filter for me. TCP.sourceport equal and the port address that was selected in that frame. And I can change this now to what you know whatever I want. Now, an interesting thing is it did source port. It didn't do dot port, which is, represents both directions here, because it's just taking the thing you clicked on. So this is really useful, and I don't know if this trace has. Just looking to see if there's something a little bit more complex. Like, for instance, a SAMR. If I'm all the way in here, you know, these names become pretty long. In fact, you can see this one's, you know, pretty long. So by clicking in the frame details, it makes it much easier to figure out where, what the path or what the display filter syntax is. Now, I also mentioned the IntelliSense. So again, if you start with a dot, it shows you all the top-level items. Protocol is probably the most common one you'll do. Again, if I type dot, it shows me all the protocols. Also, it kind of knows, you know, follows the TCP. As I type TCP, it jumps down to the T's. And again, I can say flags dot reset. So that's one way to explore to figure out how to get to the TCP flags. Now, you don't have to type. A lot of people kind of say, okay, well, I got to type dot first to get IntelliSense. If you type TCP dot, you know that the protocol is TCP. You can start there instead. Okay, let me show you two more things, or one more thing, I guess, really. So the standard filters, here's the list. And for the search frame example, you know, it's kind of hard to remember. Who's going to remember how to do the contains bin syntax? Well, it's actually one of the standard filters. We figured that people want to do this most of the time. So we actually have comments. Our filters allow you to have comments, so we can kind of explain things. So this has a lot of the information needed to create a contains bin filter. And three examples, one we did on ASCII, the top, and the other two we have sort of commented out. Here's a Unicode, and it's called UTF-16B because it's big endian, little endian. People are like, oh, I don't know, what I want a Unicode. That's what I want to do. Well, that's the example right here. And I thought we had, I actually thought I had added some information that Unicode meant that. Well, I don't know that's in there. And then finally, here's one with hex details. So if I want to search hex, I can just put a string of hex numbers in there. And we have lots of, in fact, probably the ones for you guys. At least for the AD kind of centric stuff. Here's an LDAP, finding any LDAP. And you can see that we've done it on all the possible ports rather than just the 389. So if you need to find LDAP traffic, that's one way to do it. Yes? So the question is there any support for regular expressions? And no, we don't currently have a way to do regular expressions. That's actually been a big ask and probably something we'll look at for the next major version.
The other thing is these days more and more we deal with encrypted traffic and the
pointer is the best practices. Okay, so the question is how do you deal with encrypted traffic? And for the most part, you either have to get it unencrypted to begin with, or we're actually releasing a tool for decrypting SSL traffic. We're hopefully in the next couple of weeks. It's an expert, but it requires a private key. You need the private key to decrypt the data. Obviously, that's the reason it's done that to begin with. But that will let you decrypt data over SSL with certain limitations on the encryption algorithms. But so that's the one of the solutions. We're hoping an expert, basically, that'll do this for you. But it's limited to HTTP or NMDecrypt. So I'm going to tell you about the experts later on in the talk. We have a web page that basically lists all the experts on them, and we'll update that web page when we release this.
Can we also integrate experts?
So yes. So we have an API, and I'll discuss that in a second as well. So you have to, so this is like a system administrator question. You have to go, like if you're working with Google or Yahoo or something, you have to go ask them, give us your private key. There's no way, they actually have to send, so the way we do is in the experts, we use the certificate. So you'd export the certificate from the cert admin program, or if it's, you know, a Unix box, you can, I think they still support the same format. I can't remember the format, but basically you input a certificate. So you have to get that certificate from whoever controls it.
So we're working with standard like Microsoft protocols.
Yeah, so if you control like you have an IIS server, if you run the IIS server, you can go to the cert manager, export the certificate, and then import that certificate. So this is for SSL. For RPC, totally different story. We don't really have anything for that. And the really only solution today is to figure out how to turn it off, which is not always easy to do. It is certainly a challenge, and something for the next major version, you know, the 4.0 or whatever the next version of network monitor is something we're looking at doing in a completely different fashion, perhaps inserting ourselves somewhere else in the stack or something to solve that problem. Any other questions? It's different. Every protocol, if it's allowed, there's usually some registry entry. So the question is, for RPC, do we have tips on how to turn off decryption? And the problem is that it's unique for every implementation. Some people have a registry key you can turn it off. Some people have to run like a debug or checked version to turn it off. And sometimes it's not possible at all. So there's no general way to do that. So the question is with Kerberos and NTLM, if you have the keys, can you decrypt the traffic? Yeah, we don't have a tool to do this. The decryption expert I'm talking about is specific for SSL traffic or TLS traffic. For doing NTLM or some other authentication, we don't have a tool to do that. Now, if you had, what's that? Yes, so you could write, so... Yes, if you have the knowledge to convert the data yourself, like if you have a way, you know how to do it, or there's possible, we have an API that allows you to call into the parsers, parse the data, get the blobs out. You can take the blob out, encrypt it, and then write it back out to another cache file. That's what we do with the NMDecrypt expert, actually. It is. I mean, so we just kind of drew a line. So the question is why don't we build this into the product ourselves? And yeah, it is. The problem is that it's different. It's a very wide. Encryption is not, there's not just one way to do it. SSL does it one way. RPC does it another way. There's just different levels. So it becomes such a complex problem to solve in a product. Not saying that it shouldn't be done there. Yeah, I'm not saying that it can't be done. It might be something we look at doing. We also have other ideas of doing this because one of the problems is getting the public or the encrypted key is sometimes difficult to do as well. Probably can't go to Google and say, "Hey, give me the key." It's almost easier to say, "Hey, Google, you run out, type your own key and send us the resulting trace or whatever." But if you have all the information, yes, you're right. It should be possible, and it's something we're trying to figure out the best way to do this. And whether the experts themselves are, I won't say they're well integrated into the UI, but they're fairly, they're almost like they're part of the UI. You right-click on a frame, you run the expert, and it outputs a trace and opens Netmon again. So the experts, the fact that it's an expert doesn't make it that it can't be integrated in the UI. And in the next version, I think we'll probably do a better job of melding those together so that it'll look like it's part of the UI anyways. It won't be that much different. So it's supposed to be kind of seamless to begin with. Any other questions? Yes. Yeah, that's a good idea. So for Control F, let's say that I wanted to find the next frame that matched tcp.port equal 389. So now I can do a search and it will just jump to the next frame that matches. So now it's highlighted frame 3. And I can keep on going. So it's basically just a find in that.
So by the property you're looking for, so like you can do it right.
The filter, yeah. So in order to use the find, you're basically typing in a filter, and the next frame that matches that filter is the one that's highlighted. Make sense? All right, so the next one, make sure I didn't skip ahead. So aliases, I talked about this real quick, but this is the idea that I can assign a friendly name in the source and destination column. It has some limitations, but basically the source and destination column is usually the MAC address, the IP address, or the resolved name. It can be any one of those three. But you can also assign a friendly name, which will take precedence over all of those, and you can do that by right-clicking the name. Okay, let's do this real quick. So I can say that this long address up here, this whatever it is, IPv6, I can create an alias by clicking on it. I can give it a name. I don't know that it's the server, but I will say it is. And then you have to actually apply it. And then once I apply it, you can see now the destination says server rather than that long IPv6 address. So hopefully it gives you a simple way to kind of associate names when you're bad like me at remembering long IP addresses. Okay, so reassembly. We don't do this by default, and many frames can be fragmented, right? I mean, this is part of networking. If it doesn't fit in your payload size, you fragment it and send it on. And this can happen at many layers. TCP is the typical one. HTTP, MSRPC can all do fragmentation. They're not automatically reassembled. You open up a trace, basically all that data is going to be scattered. And you might look at a frame. In fact, you might be opening an SMB packet, an RPC packet, and say, hey, this isn't parsed right, guys. It stopped right here at the end. It's broken. Your parse was busted. Probably because it's been fragmented. So you can fix this by hitting the reassembly button. It's only available in saved traces. If you're doing a live trace, that option doesn't even show up. We can only do this today on the saved trace. So you have to save the trace, reopen it, hit the reassembly button. And then we open a new window and we insert new frames. So now the frame numbers are all kind of messed up. So it's not, there's advantages and disadvantages doing it this way. But one of the main disadvantages that show up is that if you're looking for frame number one and you try to go find the other, it's going to move a little bit because we've inserted all these frames. So
what do you mean the frame? Like it just sequenced the
Yeah. The original trace. So the question is what do I mean by the frames get moved? And actually, I'm going to show you this here in a second. I'll show you on the slides. It's just as easy. But so the first thing is that if you see these continuation, TCP continuation, I see HTTP continuation, that's your key. You say, hey, I probably need to reassemble this trace. And so when you reassemble, 177, the frame I have highlighted there, and it's underlined, by the way, because I have a color filter that kind of makes these inserted frames show up so I can find them real easily. gets inserted. So now frame 178, that used to be one frame 77, maybe got shifted down a little bit. So that's what I meant, they get moved in. So this color filter I created, which is something called payload header, highlights all these frames, because the way this works is when we reassemble the data, is we take all the frames, we reassemble them together, and we stick a new frame with a brand new header, because TCP doesn't work anymore. It's not even, the, you know, TCP size has changed because it's a reassembled header. So we insert a new header. So what Wireshark does is it takes the last frame and kind of puts some new frames in there. So sometimes people get confused, you know, they're looking at the last frame and it's, and the first frame doesn't even show up anymore. So I think there's, I don't know, there's disadvantages, advantages obviously in both ways. But what we do is we add a new frame, it's headed with a payload header, and then the reassembled data is stuck underneath. So this packet would be complete. You could look at HTTP and see the whole HTTP web page or whatever it is. So the color filter I use is I just underline anything that has payload header as part of the filter. Payload header is the name of the header we add in. So the result is it underlines these. So often what I do is to find the associated frame, I mean, there's different ways, I suppose, on what protocol. But for instance, I would probably look up the request. And so you'd see the request, the continuation, and it looks like the same thing again, right? It says basically the same address, because it's the packet inserted in there again with the same kind of header information, except now all this continuation data has been stuck in at the end. So the question is, what protocols does it know to reassemble? So cool thing is this is actually defined by the parsers themselves. So anybody that does fragmentation, any protocol that does fragmentation and writes a parser for network monitor can also build in the reassembly logic into the MPL. So I think, so the list is probably pretty long, but TCP for sure, HTTP, RPC.
RPC fragments or even stops?
RPC, like fragmented data that RPC is fragmented in its payload. I'm trying to think about it. There's a bunch of other ones, like a lot of the streaming protocols do fragmentation that we'll put back together. Was there a question?
Just SMB.
Yeah, SMB is another one that we reassemble. So there's a bunch of them in there. And for the most, I mean, if you find one that doesn't, you can tell us and we can see if we can add the logic. But I think for everyone that's been fragmented, we try to refragment. There actually is one exception. The one exception is that reassembled data that's inner frame, like some protocols will actually chop up data and stick it in the same frame. We can't handle that. It has to be cross-frame in order for us to reassemble it properly. Any questions on reassembly? Yes. Yes, that's actually a great question. So the question is, does it include multiple levels of reassembly? And it does. And so that's what you'll see sometimes is, let's say that HTTP has split up a packet into four HTTP chunks, and each of those chunks have been further fragmented by TCP, which can happen. So actually what you'll end up seeing is that each of the eight TCP chunks are reassembled. You see an underlined version of those, and then each of those chunks will be put back together in the HTTP at the HTTP layer. So certainly when you're looking at the reassembled trace, you sort of have to know what's going on, unfortunately. You have to know that, okay, this is one chunk, there's another chunk that was separated by TCP, and at the end, HTTP has chunked them all together, so now there's one more frame for those. And it can go, it's all hierarchical, so every layer that defines reassembly has to put their chunks back together, and then the last one that's the upper level protocol will end up putting them all back together at the end. The API also supports this, and it's unfortunate our UI doesn't expose, we have these flags that tell it whether it's a first, a middle, or a last frame in the API so we can access that information. It would be useful to have it in the UI, because you can actually create a filter that says, okay, don't show me all the chunks, I just want to see the end frames, but we can't do that today. So when you're looking at a trace, you could create a filter that says show me all the payload stuff to get only the fragmented pieces, but then you don't see anything that's not fragmented. So there's no easy way to do that in the UI. And that's been a common request, some way to kind of deal with those reassembled frames. So something a little bit confusing. I've also, on my blog, I've got a reference to some videos that talk about doing reassembly, which might help as well. Kind of goes through an example of this you might find interesting.
What you're saying seems to be fairly easier to extend the RPC parsing to stuff, because it's a very simple criteria, and maybe you want to extend it to default parsing, but maybe I could play around.
Yeah, so...
call IDs, and you have first and last bit for the thing.
Yeah. Right, so the comment is it must be pretty easy to extend for RPC, and it is, because we do the reassembly for you. So if you're writing an RPC app, you don't have to worry about reassembly. We've done all the reassembly for you. You're just building on top of RPC that's been, you know...
No, I mean, right now you're doing all the fragments.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. You have to... the question is...
So you can add it to the default then.
Well, it is already there. You mean the reassembly?
Yeah, but you asked, you said it's only fragment reassembly, not stub
reassembly. Maybe I don't understand what you mean by...
This RPC, it sends things over the wire in fragments.
Right.
Okay? And the fragments can break up into different frames.
Right.
But actually, the RPC request is a multiple fragment thing. So you can have like multiple fragments that build up one request.
Okay. So I think I misunderstood the question. The answer to that, which includes the question, is that we will reassemble at TCP and at RPC. So we will do both levels of reassembly for you automatically. So if TCP is fragmented a frame, if RPC is fragmented a frame, and each of those frames are fragmented at TCP, we will show you the full RPC payload at the end. We'll reassemble all the RPC data as well. Yeah, including the stub. The whole packet, including the stub data. So, again, going back, if you're going to write an RPC parser or have to work with an RPC parser, the whole frame will be available for you, and you'll be able to parse, you know, read the whole thing in Network Monitor if you hit the reassembly button. All right, so frame commenting. So this is a feature we added in 3.3, which allows you to take a trace and annotate it. You can click on a frame, add some text to it, and use that later. You can save the trace out and then easily find those comments. So one of the uses, we recently released something called SysDocs, and what I'll do, oh, that'll be useful. So on CodeFlix, I actually wrote a blog on this, annotated traces for Windows system behavior. So what our team has done is taken these system overview of behavior and put a couple of traces up there to try to document the more difficult scenarios, or at least some subset of those scenarios. So they're on CodePlex, and basically what they are annotated traces. Of course, I had this open already. So basically, if you go down here, you'll see a bunch of different scenarios, like Active Directory, obviously something that might be interesting for this particular audience. And there's three scenarios there. See if I can go find these real quick. So basically, they just created a bunch of traces that are annotated for you. So it uses this annotation feature to kind of tell you what's going on in the traffic. So I have a couple of these open. In fact, these are the ones that we've been looking at. So the first thing with annotation is that if a frame is annotated, we put this little number sign next to the frame number. There are other ways to find the annotations, but when you click on this frame, the frame comment section gets populated with the comment for that section. So I could actually add another one if I wanted to. I could edit and add my own. And the cool thing is that this particular description is RTF enabled. So it means that you can paste RTF text in there and it'll maintain like the hyperlinks you saw in the one before. So you can have hyperlinks, you could have color, whatever you can do with rich text format. Now the problem is, or not the problem, the limitation is you can't do it in our UI. We don't have any toolbars or, you know, paint programs. But you can go into WordPad or Word, cut and paste, and it'll cut and paste the rich text enabled format. So these SysDocs have these commented frames that allow you to kind of get an overview of what's going on in the first frame. It has a link to the actual documentation that you can use. You can go to next comment by using the next comment button here. And that was the one I added, but at frame 23, so now it says step type roles, frame, description, this message is triggered once. So it's basically describing the scenario, which in this case is, I can't really see the whole thing, but it's using LDAP, creating a user using LDAP, and it, I think it says something more than that. You can also, so one of the things I didn't talk about too much is that you can, in the UI, you can add in new columns. The columns themselves are exposed via these properties I talk about in the MPL. So a property is just some metadata that you can create for a frame. You can add in a property or add in a column for the column for the comments, which is kind of cool. The comment title, that is, and you can't do the text. So I can actually see the comments as, or at least the comment subject as a title. You can also do a filter to only show those frames with comments. And I believe we actually have a standard filter built in where comment titles exist or not blank. So now you can just kind of use the frame summary to go through here and just at least quick overview of what's going on for the commented frames. Not every frame was commented in this particular annotation, but this kind of gives you a high level of what's going on so you can kind of dig in and find out what's going on. So that's kind of cool. Cool use of the annotation feature. And of course, you could use it for whatever you want to do. Another caveat there is once you add a comment, you have to save it as a new file name. You can't save it to the same file, which is just a limitation of how our file format works. All right, the parsers. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail. Oh, yes. Sure. Is it possible to search the comments? So yes, you can search the comment titles. You could use the dot contains to search. So you can do property dot comment title dot contains. You can search them that way.
So you think of it as a part of the frame?
Exactly. It's part of that metadata. Because properties, the metadata, can be searched like anything else in Network Monitor. I won't say you can't search the text portion, but it's RTF formatted. So when we, in memory, we hold it as a bunch of the, I don't know if you ever looked at RTF before, but it's a bunch of funny things. So if something is colorized and you're searching for the word text, if the T is colorized, it'll be like, you know, like HTML. It'll be kind of all crazy. Yeah, exactly. So that makes that kind of difficult and unfortunate. But you can search the comment title for sure. So the question is it possible to save the comments? You can't save, okay, so you mean like to save a text file that contains all the comments? You couldn't, no, there's no way to do that. You could create something with the API if you wanted to do that. You could certainly create your own program. And I guess you could also use the cut and paste feature to save the comment titles if you wanted to do that. Not the comment text, but the comment titles. Is that it? All right, any other questions on annotation? All right, so the parsers themselves, again, I'm not going to go to a lot of detail, but they're basically scripts that are written in this MPL language, and they define the, like we talked before, conversations, reassembly, properties. They're all defined in these scripts. They're all shipped with the product, so you have access to all the parsers. We also update them monthly. There's changes in the parsers happening all the time, bug fixes, new features for Windows 7, for instance. We added SQL parsers recently. So you can get the monthly update from our CodePlex site. And there's a package, an MSI you install, installs the latest parsers. You can write your own parsers. You can create properties for filtering, this metadata. If you needed to gather some information in a property for filtering, you could do that yourselves. You can change the summary lines. If you don't like how something looks, you can change them in the parsers. Also, we talked about the reassembly and the conversation. You can change how that works. We also have this right-click, go to definition. So let's say, and this kind of goes back to the problem of, I want to know where the documentation for this is. So let's go back and let me find, I think this. So I'm looking at this SMB trace. And let's say that I wanted to find the protocol documentation for this SMB trace. We have this feature, so I'm going to go down this little story before I tell you the end. We have this feature that allows you to get to the definition of any of these commands. So when I right-click on NTStatusCode, go to definition, it jumps to the code. It brings it up in our browser. And of course, I'm on the wrong screen, so you guys think I'm crazy. So it brings up the code where that function is. So if you wanted to mess around, figure out what's going on, you could do that. But what I'm going to do is I want to find out where this is documented. I don't understand how NTStatus works. What we do at the top of all of our parser files is we have the references defined at the top. So you can go to the top of any of these MPL files and find the references. So MS, SMB, you can do a search for that on the web. And then you can go into that documentation and find that field. So it's not not as simple as right-click, go to protocol specification, which is something we're thinking about for the future. But this gives you a way to find out what those references are in the documentation. Any questions? And then here's the parser tab. We basically have on the left side, we have the object view, which is just a way of kind of looking through the different languages. You could look up by the protocol, by data types, tables, various ways to look up the data via this tree. And we just have the text. It's an editor. It's not the greatest editor, but you can do simple changes there. And then once you make a change, you save the file, you can reload the parsers using this thing at the top. It rebuilds the parsers for you. If there are any error messages, you can double-click and try to resolve any of the error messages. And then now your new parsers are loaded. You might have to reload your cacher file depending upon the changes you made. All right, now the API. So if you expose an API, if you download Network Monitor, you get all the tools, well, basically all the tools except for a compiler, to build programs with the API. So with the API, you can access the capture engine. You can do a capture, stop, start captures. But you can also read the data, the fields that we expose in the UI. So you could write an API to decrypt data like we were talking about before. You can also do filtering. The filtering is very much like the API. You pass in a filter, and you test it against various frames. So you say TCP, you check a frame, you run a filter, TCP.port equal 80 as a string, and it'll return the results whether or not it passed. You can also, and this is new to 3.3, read properties and comments. So you could write experts to deal with the comment annotations. You can also get the display descriptions, the stuff that we write, you know, in our frame details and in the summary window, or the basically the frame details, the description titles, those pretty formats that we do. And then you can also access the conversation information with the API. So you can build your own conversation tree or associate data via the conversations. And again, it's all included. You have the .ah, the lib file, all that. So another new feature we kind of started integrating to NetMon is this idea of experts. And basically, they're independent tools that you create, but you can run from the UI. You can place yourself in the menu in the UI and then right-click on a frame and get some context information, like the frame number, basically. Pass that to your expert and have the expert analyze that data. So that context-sensitive part of it is that you can click on a frame. It passes the number of selected frames, so you had 20 frames selected, conversation, or a display filter. It'll pass out all information as command line arguments to your expert, and then you can do whatever you want. You can parse the data, open the capture file, whatever. World of possibilities. There's so many things you can do. We have many more experts internally that we haven't externalized yet that we're looking to do. It's just, unfortunately, a slow process. But basically, there's a lot of things you can do. And then going back to where these experts are, they're available on CodePlex. And actually, so we have a forward link that didn't work this morning, but let's see. So the first trick here is this menu doesn't show up unless you're on a loaded trace. If you're doing a new trace open the UI, the menu doesn't show up. We're fixing that for the next version. But basically, if you've got a loaded trace, you'll get this experts menu. You can run the experts. But you can also download experts. And what this does is go to our CodePlex site, which lists the available experts we have. So the simple search, the top users, TCP analyzer, and this decryption expert, which I talked about that we hopefully will be releasing in the next couple of months, will show up there as well. So you can go back there and look for the new versions or the new experts as they appear. And then finally, to run an expert, in this particular instance, I'll run the top users expert. So I just clicked from the menu, opens the expert, it goes ahead and parses the data. And so this is a separate executable running side by side. It's not running within the space of Network Monitor, but you basically can do all, I have all the same information, so I can, you know, basically parse all the data the same way. Not very interesting for this trace, but basically this was top users. And that's it for any questions on the API. I kind of just moved through that quickly, but if there are any specific questions, can take them now or afterwards. That's fine. So finally, wrapping up. So what should you do? Well, please play with the product. Visit CodePlex for latest parsers. You can think about experts for your domain. Maybe there's some cool things you guys can do for solving RPC problems or a specific protocol problem, because we're obviously a group of generalists. We don't know every protocol, but there's definitely a lot of things. And the other thing I had listed here, and then I think I rebooted, is join our community. We have a community on, in fact, on the next slide, I have a list of all the links, which we'll try to make available to you. But on Connect, we have a community where you involved in betas. We'll probably be putting another beta out here in the next couple of months. We have our blog. We have the forums where you can ask questions on TechNet about Network Monitor, parsing, MPL, API, anything like that. And then, as I mentioned, CodePlex has our parsers and our experts as well. So that's it for me. Any other questions before I leave? No? All right. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate your time, and hopefully you'll use Network Monitor.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you.